Our New Testament gospel lesson for this fifth Sunday in Lent, the last Sunday in Lent, is another long passage. John was just kind of into those things. So there's no point in reading just part of it, so we're reading verse 1 through 45, and thank goodness Judith is here to help so you don't have to listen to one voice that long. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus. Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when the Lord heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was.
Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and you are going to go there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble, because the light is not in them. After saying this, he told them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right. Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him.
When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world.
When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, see how he loved him? But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?
Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench, because he has been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took the stone away, and Jesus looked upwards toward heaven and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go."
Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him.
May God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. Thank you. The story of the raising of Lazarus from the dead is a true story. Speaking personally, however, I don't believe it is a real story. As in a literal account of historical events involving the resuscitation of a corpse that had already begun to decay. And that is the paradox of progressive Christianity. Being able to claim the truth being revealed in a story by interpreting what is written as metaphorically symbolic of a deeper reality, without getting bogged down in arguments over whether the story really happened the way it was written or not. And by the way, if you lie somewhere in between literal and metaphorical, or just don't know, that's fine too. In other words, don't let the improbable and implausible literalness of the story lead you to disregard it altogether. So now that we have that out of the way, let us dig deep into the richness of this story for what it has to offer to our understanding of God, to an understanding of ourselves, and perhaps most importantly, to an understanding of our role as a community of faith. Admittedly, this very long story about the raising of Lazarus has numerous important issues that deserve a great deal of study and reflection. But today, I'd like to primarily address just one small element of this story. And it's a detail that is most often overlooked completely in the process of getting caught up in all the miraculous goings-on, like resurrection, or more correctly, resuscitation. But first, however, I want to take a brief detour and talk about the importance and significance of art. For in a way, it does in fact reveal our own approach to picturing biblical stories. So, if you were going to paint a picture depicting the story that you have just heard, what scene in this long story would you paint? How would you paint it? What characters would be present? What would they be doing? And who would be the focus? Well, this week, I looked at dozens of paintings of how this particular biblical story from John 11 has been portrayed throughout the ages. And I've included a bulletin insert that you may want to refer to at this moment with three works of art that I will be referring to in just a moment. Now, the vast majority of all the paintings have one of two major points of focus. The first and the most common, of course, have Jesus as the primary focus. He's usually portrayed as looming above the crowd, like on a rock or on a platform, his outstretched arm raised high in the air in the midst of performing the miracle. This is the approach taken by Rembrandt around 1630 in his painting entitled The Raising of Lazarus. And you can see it on the upper left-hand corner of the bulletin insert. Now, the second major focus for painters is on Lazarus, arising from a tomb, usually wrapped up like a mummy. And most of all of the paintings also include other background characters of folks looking stunned and amazed, even frightened. And most of them are focusing their attention on Jesus. Now, interestingly, Rembrandt returned to this story a couple years after he did the first painting and did an updated etching. It's also entitled The Raising of Lazarus. And I've included that on the upper right-hand corner of the bulletin insert. And notice that in the reimagining of this scene, Jesus' back faces us, albeit with one arm outstretched high performing the miracle, but his other hand more nonchalantly placed on his hip. So the observer's eye is naturally drawn to what Jesus is looking toward, which is Lazarus sitting up in the tomb. And the onlookers behind him are not touching him, just like in the previous painting, and they are still filled with shock and amazement. Well, then I came across another painting that I liked in particular, which more than any of the others portrayed this often overlooked command at the very end of the story, when Jesus tells the gathered community to take the stone away from the tomb, then unbind him and let him go. This is the painting that's on the bottom part of the bulletin insert. It was painted in the 1320s, almost 700 years ago, by Giotto. It's a fresco painted on a wall in the Magdalene Chapel in the lower church at the monastery of St. Francis of Assisi in central Italy. I know some of you have actually been there. Yes, Jesus is there with an outstretched arm, but only chest high, not nearly as dramatic as in the other portrayals. And Mary and Martha, Lazarus' sisters, aren't looking at Lazarus, but rather are kneeling at Jesus' feet, a sign of worship and devotion. But the most dramatic emphasis is focused on Lazarus. And in my opinion, the most compelling part of this portrayal of the story is that the community isn't just standing there looking shocked and amazed. Instead, they are actually following Jesus' instructions by helping unbind Lazarus from the wrappings that have him bound tight. And there are even two boys in the painting who are helping by removing the stone cover away from the tomb. So everyone's involved. So why do I find this particular element of the story so important? Well, primarily because it serves as a directive to our own ministry as a community of faith. It's important, very important, to note that it is not Jesus who removes the stone and does the unbinding, but rather the community that is present when Lazarus comes out. Yes, the story reveals that it is Jesus through the power of God that makes new life possible. But it is the actions of Lazarus's family and friends and community that frees him from what keeps him bound so tight. Jesus did his part, then commands us to do our part. And that is to help remove that which binds others, helping release them from that which entombs them. We have therefore been given a very crucial and active role in helping to bring about the wholeness and freedom and new life of others. And the person who is bound, and metaphorically that can mean not by death itself, but rather by things such as sin, or alienation, or prejudice, or oppression, or addiction, or poverty, or loneliness, or low self-esteem, is unable, according to this story, to unbind himself or herself without help from others. So that's where we come in. While it is God who makes new life possible, our role is to be among those who approach those in need and do what we can in the process of unbinding and setting free. And in all reality, a day doesn't go by when we don't encounter someone who is bound. The question is, what are we doing to help? As individuals or as a congregation? Well, as a congregation, whenever we are able to reach out with an open and welcoming hand to others, providing a safe place of sanctuary and hope, we are involved in the process of unbinding. And who among us hasn't found that the newness of a progressive religious perspective plays a crucial role in unbinding us from what we have considered to be the clutches of church dogma and orthodoxy? And we also believe in a God who loves us unconditionally, who draws near to us and wants us to understand that we are called to share that love that we receive with others. And each and every time we work to improve the well-being of others and strive for equal rights for all persons, we are working to unbind those who are bound by injustice. All of these are part of our mission statement. Ultimately, the story of Lazarus is a story about liberation. And it's also a coming out story from that which entombs you and me. For perhaps you are the one who feels like you are entombed and bound tight, in need of liberation. Coming out from whatever it is that keeps us from being the people that God has created us to be is not easy. Psychological issues, sociological issues, political issues, spiritual and religious issues, and others can make us feel like we are the ones, in reference to our Old Testament reading from Ezekiel 37, in that valley of dry bones. So whether you are the one who is bound or the one helping to do the unbinding, this story of coming out and finding liberation should bring each of us much hope. The story of Lazarus must become a parable for us, in the sense that it must become our story. And to quote biblical commentator Veronese Miles, we must continue to pray and work for the power of resurrection in the lives of persons and communities bound by the grave claws of war, genocide, poverty, disease, systematic abuse, and systematic oppression. And as mentioned, releasing persons and communities from the clutches of death also demands something of us, as did Lazarus's resurrection of his community. You know, people today require caring communities that are willing to nurture and strengthen them until they are able to walk alone, to remove the grave clothes of self-doubt and social isolation, marginalization, loneliness, and oppression, to tear away the wrappings of fear and anxiety and loss and grief that the unbound women, men, and children might walk in dignity and become creative agents in the world. In other words, we are called to live life fully and to help others to experience life to the fullness as well. So in my painting of this story, if I had the ability to paint, each of our faces would appear in the crowd, standing ready to respond to when Jesus either commands us to come out or to take away the stone and unbind them and let them go. Amen.